Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Lakers Collective. Good morning. Happy to have y'all here. If you're coming in, joining us live on YouTube, I'll say it right off the bat. Make sure you hit the subscribe button. Turn on those notifications as well. Check us out over on Apple Podcasts. Leave us that five-star rating and review. Jovan Buhan, Jason Timpf, I'm Trevor Lane. We're going to talk some Lakers basketball on today's show. We've got a lot of things to get into. The Lakers coming off of a loss to the Phoenix Suns. What that can mean for tonight against the Toronto Raptors. Early game, 4:30 p.m. Pacific time. No Luka Doncic. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about whether or not a trade fixes what ails the Lakers. Still 15-5. I think we got to be pretty happy with the record. Guys, earlier show that we typically do here, so let me ask you guys this. Are you guys coffee guys, energy drinks, just natural early morning adrenaline? How are you guys doing it?
So I got snowed on last night or yesterday, 7 inches of snow. So I'm kind of like trapped in my house right now. So it's very unusual coming from Tucson. But I will say, looking out at the snow all over the mountains with a cup of coffee in the morning is a vibe. I'm a little worried about you, Jovan, though, because, like, dude, you got to be jet lagged or something. You entered into a different time zone, my friend.
Yeah, I'm not used to being up at 8 in the morning, full disclosure. I am a night owl since the middle of my teenage years. My average bedtime is somewhere between, like, 2 to 3 a.m., so I am much more of a night owl, get up at 9 to 10, so we're a little bit above, or, you know, it's okay though. But I'm a big coffee guy. No matter the temperature, even when I'm traveling during the winter months and it's 0 degrees outside, 20 degrees, whatever, I will still have a cold brew. So I'm a big cold brew guy.
So I'm an energy drink guy. I've never been into coffee. It's never been my thing. But Jovan, I'm just like you. I default to like 2 a.m., 3 a.m., something like that, bedtime. Not a morning person at all. I've been like that since I was a little kid. My parents called me the Johnny Carson kid because I was up while the night show was on and all of that. So morning's not the norm for me. I'm sure I will probably trip and stumble through some of this because I'm not a morning person, but that's okay. We've got some Lakers basketball to talk about. Happy to see you all here again. If you guys have not done so yet, please make sure you do hit that subscribe button. Guys, this is a different show in that not only the time is a little bit different, but the Lakers are coming off of a loss. They had been on a 7-game win streak, but then they dropped that game to the Phoenix Suns. We've got to get into that. 5 losses on the season, certainly some commonalities between those losses when we look at the turnovers, we look at stylistically, the way these teams play. Jason, let's start with you. What do you think about the loss to the Suns? Was that, the next step in a series of losses that have all kind of had the same problems? Did that present unique challenges for the Lakers? What did you take away from that game?
You know, one of the things that is always frustrating to me about the way basketball is talked about is that it's usually discussed in absolutes. It's like, oh, this guy's a bad defender, mm-hmm. or this guy can't shoot, or this team can't do this, or this team can't do that. When the truth of the matter is all that stuff is determined night to night. And you always have another chance to battle, and you always have another opportunity to either make shots or make stops or make mistakes or don't make mistakes, right? And like, there's two ways to look at what happened to Phoenix. The truth of the matter is that the Lakers have had problems with these teams that are particularly big and strong on the perimeter. I think there was an interesting juxtaposition between the Dallas game and this game against Phoenix, in the sense that, like, Dallas is an elite defense statistically, but they're elite in many ways because of how big they are underneath the basket and their length and their ability to defensive rebound, contest shots, things along those lines. Max Christie could not guard Luka. That like, they didn't have as a team anybody that could guard Luka. And that ultimately is what made it easy for the Lakers to pick that defense apart, because at the point of attack, they could consistently compromise Dallas. And, you know, obviously Jason Kidd did them some favors by throwing so many multiple defenders at Luka. But he did that because he didn't trust any of his individual defenders on Luka, right? The difference is with Phoenix, because of Ryan Dunn, because of Dylan Brooks, they had a couple of guys where it's like, yeah, you know, we Luka's going to score, but we can make life really difficult on him. And if you look around at some of the matchups that they've struggled with over the course of this LeBron-Luka era, it's been teams that have really big physical perimeter defenders that can give issues to Luka specifically initiating the offense. So again, going back to my initial point, there's two different ways to look at that, right? Does that mean that the Lakers can't beat this type of team? Of course not. For the record, the Lakers have had success against these types of teams in the last year since Luka's been a Laker, right? Like, yes, the Lakers got their butts kicked by the Thunder a few weeks back. They also had a game where they went into Oklahoma City last season, again, different Thunder team, but still very good team that presented similar problems defensively. And he didn't turn the basketball over. He did manage the ball pressure super well. He did consistently make the appropriate kickout passes against OKC's aggression. The Lakers did make shots. It allowed them to keep the game in the half court and keep OKC at a transition. And they had a blowout win. And then another game where up until Luka got ejected where he looked pretty good. Even the Minnesota series, right? You look at the Lakers have had a couple of games against Minnesota this season where they've handled the ball pressure really well and picked apart their defense and their aggression, made the kickout passes, knocked down shots, and beat them. So ultimately, it's important to acknowledge that, yes, the Lakers have this particular weakness. They can succumb, for lack of a better word, to this type of ball pressure and physicality on the perimeter, but they also can beat it. And so that's going to be the kind of determining factor for the Lakers and their success this season is when they run into this type of team in a playoff series, will they succumb to this challenge or will they rise to this challenge and succeed? And so, again, it's not an absolute, it's not a death sentence, but it is a potential pitfall for this team that they will have to conquer if they want to eventually reach their goals.
Agreed, 100%. I think that this is going to be a real challenge for them with this style of team. And of course, we'll talk about the Toronto Raptors and the challenge they're going to face tonight in just a bit. But this is stylistically the type of team that gives the Lakers problems. I talked about it going into the last game against the Suns especially if the Suns turn the Lakers over, you run into some problems and things do snowball pretty quickly. And that's why we've seen the five losses so far for the Lakers. They've all been by double digits. They've also had a minimum of 19 turnovers in those games because those teams that can really speed them up and give them some issues with their defensive pressure, they force turnovers. And next thing you know, the game can get out of hand very quickly. Jovan, that one was certainly a frustrating night for the Lakers. What did you take away from that game? And then what does that tell us about the team moving forward?
I think to Jason's point, I agree that it shows us what this group's weakness is. Like, I think there's been a clear trend in all five losses to some degree that the Lakers have looked like the slower, less athletic basketball team. And there are times where, frankly, it looks like they're playing a different sport where, there were several times in that game where the Lakers would have a turnover or it'd be a missed shot and you freeze frame it and you look at where each of the 10 players on the floor are at. And then 2 seconds later, four or five Suns players are past like the entire Lakers team. And from a speed and conditioning perspective, that was something that really stood out on film. Like, yes, there was a lot of pick sixes to LeBron made that point after the game of they did have plenty of those, but they also had several situations of just 50-50 balls or just regular, defensive rebounds for the Suns that led to transition opportunities because the Lakers were not getting back. So I think it is something that they can overcome and something that they can certainly be sharper with. At the same time, like it is a little troubling that they continue to lose in the same way, in my opinion, right? Because Phoenix was like this, OKC was like this. I think Portland was like this, but I put the Portland game to the side a little bit just because second night of a back-to-back, Austin just dropped 51, near triple-double, no Luka, no LeBron. So that was a really tough I think a schedule loss, honestly. Then you go to Atlanta, which Atlanta was also decimated. The Lakers didn't really take them seriously, but there were elements of Atlanta's size, length, athleticism really hurting the Lakers. We talked about that. And then even opening night, like Golden State isn't the most athletic team, but they are very quick. They are very disciplined. At least they used to be before things went off the rail with their season. And like that's been a matchup, last couple of matchups where they played the Lakers, they sort of ran them off the floor. So this has been a little bit of a trend. I think it's more honestly speed than athleticism. The Lakers are unathletic and slow, but I think the speed element hurts them more. So it is something to monitor, but I think the thing that maybe gives me the most pause is like, this is a very specific OKC thing, and this is what OKC does to everybody, but that's going to be like the chess match for the Lakers, is figuring this out, and they might get a shot at it in about a week and a half.
Well, and it's a copycat league, so you're going to see more and more teams employing that OKC-style defense, which is what the Lakers are essentially struggling with. As this comment says, the Suns game and the Atlanta game are one and the same, us mailing it in. The Atlanta game, I really felt, you know, I don't know what happened, why they were so low energy that game. I don't know if the Suns game was quite as low energy as the Hawks game was, but it did seem like the Lakers were just not sharp against that. We're not prepared to deal with those pressures. That said, what strikes me is we're talking about all this, and we're talking about how slow, how unathletic the Lakers look, how, you know, you would think that they are 5-15, and yet they're 15-5. So on one hand, we could look at this and we could say, this style of team gives the Lakers some problems, and I think it is important that we identify these issues. The glasses half full approach would be, man, they're slow and they're unathletic, and they're 15-5. That's pretty damn impressive. Can you then, does that then give you optimism that they can solve this problem? And maybe solve isn't even the right word. Can they mitigate this problem? Can they do enough to where, come playoff time, this kind of team isn't necessarily going to be an out for them? Jason, what's the solution to handling these teams better? Because as you noted, it's not consistently that they're just getting shredded by these teams. Is it just simply scheme? Is it energy and effort? Or is it personnel where we're talking about potentially moves?
So I think that to Dowdy's point, I think that it's not so much about mailing it in. Like, I agree with you, Trevor. I don't think the Lakers just came out and like straight up didn't play hard. I think they were playing at a different speed. And I mean that more like mentally than physically. So one of the dynamics that was interesting about that game is the Lakers had just played 7 consecutive below 500 teams, right? So as a result, I think Milwaukee might have been over 500.
Milwaukee was above when they played.
Yeah, yeah. But like, but ultimately, that group of games that they played over that 2.5 weeks, 3 weeks was a pretty light schedule. Whereas Phoenix had just come out of a couple of wars against OKC and Denver. So like, there's a level of like intensity that Phoenix was operating at that the Lakers hadn't operated at in a while. And I do think that that is part of the kind of like shortcoming there. Like, for instance, let's just say that there was a game 2 nights later against the Suns, identical set of circumstances, same 2 teams, they go out and play. The Lakers almost certainly come out and play way better because they're just out the gates with another level of intensity thanks to the butt kicking they received from Phoenix. I think that's worth mentioning. That said, anytime you see that kind of loss, there are multiple times in the game where the team tries to reassert control and they can't. And that's where it's worth acknowledging the shortcomings that we mentioned in the first segment. As far as the trade goes, like, to me, the trade is almost a separate thing from what happened in these games. In my opinion, let's just take Herb Jones as an example. If you add Herb Jones to the team, it kind of adds a couple drops to every one of the Lakers' buckets. Like, it makes them a little bit better on the glass. It makes them a little bit better in transition. It makes them a little bit better defensively at the point of attack. It makes them a little bit better defensively in rotation. It gives them another guy who can pressure the rim. So it adds a little bit more of like a downhill athleticism element to the team. It adds like a little bit of thing. It adds a little bit of benefit to the Lakers in a bunch of areas that ultimately makes the team better. And that's why we want to see them make that sort of move. I also think an underrated part of that is just giving them a clear 5. Like, okay, now you just have, this is the 5 that we're going down with in any sort of big spot, right? What happens in these games to me is more about one bucket, specifically breaking down the defense. This is the most important part of any NBA offense, is what do you do that breaks the defense, that either consistently scores against one-on-one and two-on-two coverages or dictates 2-on-1 or 3-on-2 coverages so that you can get the defense into rotation, right? Like, that's the fundamental part of scoring. You can juice that like the Miami Heat by running a ton in transition, and you could juice it like the Thunder by getting stops and running out off of turnovers. And those are certain things that you can do to juice your offense. But ultimately, when you get stuck in the half court, it's, can you break them down? And that is a Luka and Austin problem to me. eventually LeBron potentially, but I want to set LeBron to the side, and we should probably talk a little bit about LeBron today at some point, because I do think that's it. Maybe we can get to that in our mailbag, but that's an interesting thing I want to get into. But as it's currently constructed, LeBron or Luka and Austin are initiating the offense. And it doesn't matter if a Herb Jones is out there, if Luka and Austin have 15 or 14 turnovers and they're giving up a million fast break points the other way and pick sixes off of bad turnovers, or if they can't break down the defense, score against one-on-ones and two-on-twos in the example of the Suns matchup, or don't turn the basketball over more like OKC when they're consistently sending extra defenders. And so to me, like, the trade is a separate thing. It makes the team better in all these little ways that can help close the gap between them and Houston and Denver. But it's not going to solve this particular problem, which is Luka and Austin have to manage the point of attack better than they do in these types of matchups.
And I think that's a really important distinction, because what it is that's powering the Lakers right now, the engine that is driving them forward, it is their half-court offense. Just looking at the numbers right now in the half-court, the Lakers are number two in the NBA, according to Cleaning the Glass, in points generated per 100 possessions. They are phenomenal in the half-court offense. That is masking a lot of their other weaknesses. When they do force turnovers, and actually not a bad steals team when it comes to getting live ball turnovers, they're not very good at actually scoring in transition. Then, and the reason why they rank decently high in terms of points off of turnovers is because when they turn the ball over or they force a turnover and they get out in transition and they're not able to get a full transition possession and they have to go into their half court, they're scoring in the half court at a very high rate. So if you take that away from the Lakers, you take that half court scoring away the way Phoenix did, turning them over, putting the pressure on, not letting the Lakers get those paint touches, that's where you're taking away their strongest weapon, the best thing that they are right now, and that is their incredibly efficient half-court offense. So that absolutely has to be fixed, solved, in terms of how the Lakers address these teams that can put that defensive pressure on them. Jovan, weigh in on that. Where do you see all of this going with the Lakers? Can Luka and Austin solve those problems or mitigate those problems? Is this just they're not that athletic, and so there's going to be that athleticism deficit? And then does that give you any concerns, optimism moving forward as we talk about playoff basketball, where athleticism does tend to pick up?
It gives me a little bit of concern, but I think, again, as we've been discussing, they have, like, Austin was incredible against Minnesota earlier this season, right? And that had been his big demon that he had to slay individually coming off of the first round series last year. Luka has cooked OKC for years. So I think, like, there are recent examples with both of those players of playing this type of defense and thriving against this type of defense. So I don't want to overlook that. I do think, though, like, this is something that the Lakers have to dive into the film and see what has been working offensively against these types of teams and what hasn't. I think one of the things that we have touched on this show several times has been their slow starts. And I think to some degree, like, some of the bad habits that they accrued during that 7-game win streak against largely under 500 teams finally, came home to roost, right? It finally was like, okay, you guys can't just show up for a quarter or show up for a half and get away with it against the Suns team. And oftentimes it's been the first quarter that's been an issue. And the first quarter wasn't as much of an issue. They were tied going into the second. But then after the Lakers got a little bit of leeway to start the second quarter, it just became a slew of turnovers. And there was that onslaught. I believe the Suns closed the second quarter on a 31-11 run to just blow the Lakers out from that point on. So I think, you know, you got to start with also probably mixing things up offensively, because I think that was part of, in my opinion, what worked in that stretch that I don't think you can do against the better defenses in the league, in terms of spamming certain actions or just running your offense a certain way. It was very Luka-centric, Luka high pick and roll. And that's, of course, going to be the bread and butter for the Lakers offensively. But maybe it is, you know, Austin bringing the ball up, or when you have Marcus or even LeBron, someone else who can bring the ball up, having them and then initiate. I thought Michael Jordan made a good point when talking about Ant facing double teams and, like, all right, play off the ball more, get into the post, like, figure out different ways to get that player the ball in an advantageous position. Like, that's something you could probably do with Luka and Austin. Now, of course, if they change their defensive matchups and start pressuring Marcus or LeBron, then, you know, that's its own thing in terms of I'm less confident in those guys being able to bring the ball up against pressure, depending on who the pressure is, right? So if you just switch Kayson Wallace onto Marcus Smart instead of Austin, like, yeah, he's going to cause problems for him. So there are different ways to, I mean, there's a reason why teams have not pressed for a while, because for the thinking used to be, you could beat an NBA press with just the passing and the speed. And so I think the Lakers need to go in the film room more, honestly, and practice this. I think this should be something they're practicing like every single time. They rarely practice, but every single time they practice, I think they need to be working on how to beat press and how to beat pressure.
Yeah, agreed, 100%. They definitely need to continue working on that, growing, and that'll be something that we'll monitor as the season goes on, because it's something that they can get better at, they can improve at as we progress forward, and they're going to have to. They're going to have to, because you know, you can't just cross your fingers and say, well, hopefully we don't run into that style of defense come playoff time. No, you're going to have to figure out a way to consistently beat those things. And so that's going to be critical for the Lakers as we do move forward here. We do have a super chat question from last show that kind of leads into some of this, that talks about Mo Love said Luka Doncic goes four for 20 in the first, goes for 20 in the first, 20 points in the first, and then only 22 points by half. I want to ask you guys about this, because Luka has a long history of being a great first quarter scorer, but then he kind of tails off. But we also talk about the Lakers getting off to slow starts in first quarters. Would it be beneficial for the Lakers if Luka's offensive output is more spread out? Should we continue to focus on these first quarter onslaughts? Is that hurting the Luka is so much looking for his shot in the early going and then kind of slowly transitions into passing and then picks up the scoring again in the fourth quarter? Is that something that needs to be changed? Jason, let's go with you.
Well, so the reason why that sort of thing happened in the particular game that question was referencing has to do with the fact that Luka scores a million points, and then by the time he checks back in the second quarter, the other team has decided to blitz him and double team him and get the ball out of his hands, and that's why he'll end up not scoring in his second shift. That said, there are examples like the Phoenix game where he has a 20-point quarter, but then Jordanat does not overreact to what happened, and he just sticks with the game plan. And what will happen there is fatigue then plays a role. And over the course of the game, it just gets harder and harder to continue to score the basketball at that type of clip. And I think there's a lot of value in that sort of approach from Luka coming out in attacking. And by the way, guys, like, he's dominated playoff series doing that sort of thing. Like, he did that to Phoenix in game six back in 2022, or like, that was how he executed Minnesota in game five in 2024. Just, you come out the gates and you score a bunch of points and the other team just like almost like falls apart mentally. I think that is fine. My thing is, like, when it becomes clear that the coverages aren't going to change, there needs to be a better effort to kind of get everybody else involved. Like, at that point, that's where if you're Luka, you have to lean more on LeBron and Austin to make it so that you're not as fatigued. I really liked all the points Jovan made too, in terms of like finding ways to beat that ball pressure in a different way. So for instance, like, have LeBron bring the ball up the floor instead of Luka or Austin, and then have Luka and Austin attack off of action where they can catch with the defender already in trail position, so ball pressure is not as much of a factor. Like, finding ways to make things easier for them, play out of the post more. Like, Luka and LeBron in the post, that is like the ultimate counter to pressure, because they have a triple threat and they have their back to the basket, and so they can, you know, they don't have to deal with that sort of pressure as much. And then when they do start dribbling, they're literally using their body as a human shield, right? And it also creates some like feasible passing reads for them. So I think it's one of those things where, as far as Luka's aggression goes, you want him to come out and be aggressive. But if the team doesn't eventually start double teaming, you have to invest in the rhythm of your co-stars, because those guys are going to have to help carry you across the finish line. And then, again, agree with everything Jovan said in terms of getting them off the ball.
And the Toronto Raptors do a lot of that, a lot of the off-ball activity. They're one of the higher pass teams in the NBA, higher assist percentage teams in the NBA. So we're going to see that a bit tonight. But I 100% agree that you need to get that off-ball activity. There was too much stagnation last game, not trying to put that on Luka, but getting guys coming off of little curls and things like that. The Lakers would like to see a little bit more diversity from the Lakers offense, so that when they do run up against teams that can handle the pick and roll, which the Lakers have been phenomenal at, they've got another pitch to go to. They've got counters that they could turn to on a consistent basis that are going to be successful for them. Logan, and there is benefit. Like, teams double Luka all the time. It's crazy. Yeah, but the Lakers are going to benefit from that because Luka is so good at passing out of those doubles. It's when you get those teams that can recover quickly, that do a nice job slowing the Lakers down. Once they do get the ball into that 4-on-3 situation that can recover and not allow the Lakers to get a decent look, that's where they run into problems. Typically, the Lakers are slicing teams up in those scenarios, but some of the quicker teams, the more athletic teams, the teams that are really playing on the same page defensively, they're giving the Lakers some issues there, and that's where you've got to have that curveball to be able to throw, and we'll see if the Lakers can develop that or not. Let's get into, so we do have a number of super chats we need to get to from the last show, but let's get into tonight's game against the Toronto Raptors. So no Luka, child being born. I don't know if it's happened yet or where we're at that whole process, but no Luka for this one tonight. I would have to guess we probably don't see Luka for tomorrow as well against Boston. Yova, what do the Lakers need to do in order to get by tonight against a Raptors team that is pretty active without Luka Doncic, as well as no Marcus Smart, still dealing with back issues?
Yeah, tonight is going to be a test for the Lakers. Toronto is top 10 on both sides of the ball right now. They're 10th in offense, 6th in defense. And they are the type of team that I think could give the Lakers problems off of the dribble when you're looking at. I was trying to see if I think, is RJ Barrett out tonight?
RJ Barrett and Jakob Poeltl both out tonight for the
Jakob Poeltl being out is actually a big thing in the Lakers' favor with, I think DA could have a big night today. But looking at Scotty Barnes, Brandon Ingram, Emmanuel Quickley, they do have multiple guys who can beat you off the dribble and multiple guys who could drop 20 plus on a given night. So I think the Lakers are going to have to be locked in defensively. This can be a team that plays with a certain pace and thrives in transition, which, you know, these are some of the things that the Lakers have struggled against. What I'm interested in is, I know we're going to touch on LeBron probably a little bit later, but like, does tonight potentially get LeBron going and just get him a certain rhythm with having the ball more? I think first and foremost, it is going to be shifting the offense toward Austin, and Austin will be the primary ball handler as he's been when Luka's been out. But can they get the ball into LeBron's hands and this look more like some of the bench lineups with LeBron and Austin that have fared pretty well since LeBron has returned? So I think it's a nice test for LA. It's not going to be an easy game. They are playing right now, as crazy as it sounds, the number two team in the East. And, you know, no, I don't think anybody had Toronto being the number two team in the East entering the season, but that's how things have played out. You got to give Darko a lot of credit for the job he's done as a coach. The free throw subplot will be interesting because remember last year he famously crashed out against the Lakers after they had, I forgot the total, but it'll be a nice test. And then, they turn around and go to Boston tomorrow. So I think for the Lakers tonight would be a great night to just take care of business and somehow win this game by like 10, 15 points and get a little bit of rest going into tomorrow. But realistically, this is probably going to be a dog fight that goes into the fourth.
A tiny dog fight. I'm sorry, that was bad. Brandon Ingram, our old friend. Jordan Ott brought up the free throws before the game against the Suns as well. I'm curious if Darko brings them up. How are we looking at this? Is LeBron's not played in back-to-backs? Does he play tomorrow? Are we looking at this as tomorrow is, you know, this game is LeBron has got to go all out, and then tomorrow it's probably Austin by himself?
Maybe Luka's back. I don't think he hasn't officially been ruled out for tomorrow, but that's the way. Like JJ just said a few days ago, the goal is to build LeBron up to play in back-to-backs. I don't know if that changed in 3 days. It feels a little ambitious. Exactly. So, I mean, hey, it's LeBron. You can never rule out LeBron doing the unthinkable as an athlete. He is a cyborg, even as he approaches 41. So I don't want to say it's impossible he plays tomorrow night, but based on the way that they have framed it to open his return, it seems like he would sit out tomorrow.
Yeah, I agree, which could make for an interesting one. But, Austin Reaves has a history of stepping up big time in situations like that as well. Jason, matchup with the Toronto Raptors. What are you seeing for tonight's game?
Yeah, you know, I'm very happy for Luka, but it's kind of a bummer just because I wanted to see the fully healthy Lakers go into this road trip and see if they could make a little bit of noise. Toronto's been interesting. In the games where Jakob Poeltl's been out, they have gone small for obvious reasons. They don't really have a traditional backup center. They've tried Jamison Battle more of like a shooter, or Colin Murray Boyles, who's like kind of a power forward type of guy that they'll put out there. But you know, that makes it a little bit tricky because I think Austin in particular would be looking to attack a guy like Jakob a lot in pick and roll, whereas he could face a lot more switching looks tonight, which is going to force it to be more of like an ISO type of contest. Toronto, Trevor, as you laid out, they are one of the best drive and kick teams in the league. They do a lot of ball and player movement in half court. They pass the ball extremely well. They have a lot of aggregate ball handling talent. They have a lot of guys who are shooting kind of above their pay grade right now, too, on spot up threes, which is something that has caused some problems. And then they're just one of the best defense to transition teams in the league. So foundationally from the start, it's going to be about the concept we talked about earlier, not turning the basketball over and keeping the ball in the half court as much as possible. And then when they're in the half court, it's going to go back to that concept that we were talking about earlier in terms of breaking the defense. And this is where I do look at LeBron, and it's kind of like an unfortunate set of circumstances, because on the one hand, like, I could not care less about how LeBron looks right now. This team is so set up to succeed when they're healthy, like when everyone's here, when Luka's playing, to succeed even with a mediocre version of LeBron. So it's like, yo, dude, take your sweet time, get ready. We're going to be fine whenever you're ready to go. I look at LeBron almost as like purely a ceiling raiser for this team in a lot of ways, in a way where it's just fundamentally different than what it was like back in the AD configuration, where it was like, okay, we need LeBron to be first team all NBA LeBron, because if he can't break down the defense, this team just doesn't have the offensive juice that they need to be able to win at the highest levels. That's not how it feels anymore because of the way that the team is built. If when Luke is there, it's like LeBron, it's like if you get 25 out of him, great. But if he just turns into a role player, he's better than any power forward in the league at being a role player. So like, it's kind of like a perfect little setup for him. But this particular stretch, and let's pretend for the sake of argument that he plays in this Boston game as well, like if they're going to have any chance in these games, they're actually going to need LeBron to be a more dynamic offensive player. And so, you know, I honestly don't have super high expectations because he hasn't had the ball much. He hasn't had much of an opportunity to build his rhythm. So like if LeBron goes out there tonight and goes for 28-8-8 and the Lakers get a win, I think that'd be like a massive development for the Lakers, because I just think LeBron's pretty far away from that. Like, this was a guy last year who was healthy for all of training camp and looked bad for the first month of the season. So like I think it's reasonable to expect that he's probably at least a month away from like really having a good groove and having his body in a good spot and having his like touch and his feel for the game at that level. One thing I'll say to Jovan's point is like Austin and LeBron have such natural chemistry, and this team does have enough depth of high level talent that like if LeBron and Austin come in and manage the game well, I do think they've got a great chance to win this game. One of the things with RJ Barrett being out is it limits one of those like bully ball athletes from the perimeter, but watch out for Emmanuel Quickley and Jamal Shedd. Both of those guys are great dribble drive guys. They can break the defense down with quick drives. And I think that Redick will have a good game plan for Ingram and for Barnes. I'm a little less worried about those guys than I am about the guards kind of breaking them down at the point of attack. But it's going to be a fun challenge. It's really just like, let's see what we get from LeBron tonight. But like, guys, like if LeBron comes out and looks like crap tonight and the Lakers lose, and then he sits out the back-to-back and they lose in Boston, doesn't mean anything about this team in the big picture. To me, I don't really care what LeBron looks like until he's got, you know, 20, 30 games underneath his belt.
Oh, we know the sky will be falling if that happens. The sky will be falling if that happens. I think this is a game where no Marcus Smart is going to be particularly painful because of those backcourt strengths that we see from the Toronto Raptors. But let's get into all that in just a moment. First, we need to give a shout out to our presenting sponsor today, and that is Underdog. They do a fantastic job, and we sure do appreciate them. Our sponsor, Underdog, has got you covered for all your sports picks this season. If you're new to Underdog, use our code COLLECTIVE. You'll get $100 in bonus entries when you play your first $5, win or lose. Here's how it works. Just pick higher or lower on two or more player stats, and you're in the game with a shot to win up to 5,000 times your money. The interface, super easy to use over on Underdog. I definitely appreciate that. Personally, I'm looking at players like Denny Avdia, like Sadiq Bey. I went with Avdia on this entry. Zach Edey has been absolutely cooking for the Memphis Grizzlies, and I threw in a little bit of SGA, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, as well. Plus, the best part, you can make your picks right now in the most states, including Texas, California, and Florida. So remember, that's code COLLECTIVE over at Underdog. You can find our link in the description down below. Big shout out and thank you to Underdog for sponsoring our show. All right, again, thank you to Underdog, our sponsor. Jovan, you said something a minute ago. You were talking about DeAndre Ayton, how DA could have a big night tonight with no Jakob Poeltl. I actually have a super chat question here, holdover from last week that I promised we would get to. Ayton is really making a difference. He scores so easy as opposed to what Luka had before in Gafford and Lively, which is interesting. I had, from within the Lakers, I had optimism going into the season that Ayton could ultimately be the best big that Luka's ever played with, that if things really go well. This super chat from Harry said, our offensive ceiling should be the highest in the whole league. What do you, with no Jakob Poeltl, what do you need to see from DeAndre Ayton in this one tonight? Oh, you're muted, Jovan.
I think just what he does on a nightly basis, where, you know, I think a lot of his stuff is within the flow of the Lakers pick and roll attack. And to me, like he's really excelled, especially since LeBron has returned, in those just trailing into those little short jumpers, you know, 14, 16 feet in transition, or, you know, early offense opportunities as well. So I don't think you need to force feed him. I think there will naturally be times where he has a cross match or a mismatch in the post, and that's where they've gotten better with those deep seal lob pass, like not an Austin lob pass, but like, you know, the lob entry passes into a posting up seal. Yeah, he did. It's every night. Yeah, that's something they got to work on in practice too. I think DeAndre, like, he, depending on the night, is going to be somewhere but 14, 16, 18, 20 points. If he scores anything more than that, I think that's like a great night for him offensively, just with his role within this team. So I think that's what they need. I think they just need, they're going to have a steady dose of Austin DeAndre pick and roll. I think that chemistry has gotten better. Go back to thinking about like them working that out in the Sacramento game at the beginning of the season. And it's just been, increasingly improving since then. Then I think we'll see maybe some, not LeBron, Ayton, like maybe a little bit of that depending on the matchups, but those two have a pretty good two-man chemistry already with LeBron. Feels like a third of his assists have been to DeAndre, and those two have really clicked. So I don't think he has to do anything out of the norm, but I think as long as he shows up with the requisite, you know, focus and motor, he's going to put up 18 and 10, and I think that's exactly what the Lakers need.
And that's been some of the criticism of Ayton over the course of his career, has been focus and motor. We've seen a few games of that, maybe, you know, that the start of the road trip, when we saw the Atlanta game. There was a stretch there of about three games that Ayton, I thought, was particularly low energy. But in general, I think he's been pretty good in that regard. And you've seen a lot of positives from him there. I think him setting those screens for Austin is going to be really important in this one, for LeBron as well, operating in the two-man game. And then when he can get to, it's one of the reasons why the Lakers are one of the best mid-range shooting teams in the NBA. I know we focus on Austin, we focus on Luka, but it's also DeAndre Ayton and how efficient he's been with the little push shot at the free throw line on the short roll that he's been getting. So he's going to need to have a big game tonight. It will be interesting when the Raptors go small, what that looks like for DA. Jason, when the Raptors do play small, you talked a little bit ago about how they do sometimes without Poeltl, they respond by playing smaller. Is that going to be a problem for DA, or is that a situation he can take advantage of?
I think it's a situation that all three, Ayton, LeBron, Austin, I'd even throw Rui into this mix as well. There's so many different ways to beat switches. I think Austin and LeBron can do it with some like kind of seal stuff. Like, so for instance, like LeBron back screening on Austin at the top of the key, forces the switch, but as inside position, Austin floats it over the top, but you know, LeBron gets a little dribble penetration. Similarly, LeBron and Austin have killed teams with inverted ball screens over the years, with Austin just kind of running up to screen for LeBron and then slipping out. So like, that's a part of a way to beat it. LeBron attacking smalls in the post, I think, is going to be a big one tonight. And then I think Ayton on the backside of switches doing damage on the offensive glass. Again, he's going to be the biggest guy on the floor for basically every one of his shifts tonight by a pretty wide margin. So like, again, like it's just, it fundamentally changes the way they have to attack. And to me, I think they're going to be okay in the half court battle tonight. It's just going to be about avoiding turnovers and avoiding just getting bludgeoned in transition. If they can maintain things in the half court, I think even against a switching look, LeBron, Austin, and Ayton should be able to do enough damage.
I think one of the keys is what Rui Hachimura was very quiet. Let's say last game, he was not super happy about it after the game either. They've got to get more from Rui in this one. Obviously he'll have more than, I believe he had one shot attempt, one rebound last game.
They were staying home. They were not giving away kickouts. It was very much a, can Luka, Austin and LeBron score the basketball, and Phoenix was living on the turnovers.
All right, we typically run out of time on Super Chat questions, so I wanted to make sure that we spend a decent chunk of this show catching up on some of these. So let's get into it. I have some from the last show, which on Monday, which, by the way, everybody, a reminder, we are going twice a week now. Make sure you do hit that subscribe button. Get turn on those notifications as well so you get notified when we are going live. Let's go here. Obviously, there's going to be a lot of questions about trades and such, but this one says, out of topic, but I don't want us to trade for Giannis. Let him go to New York and let us get Hart and maybe Gary Trent Jr. As Giannis and Doncic won't mesh. I spent a lot of time on this yesterday, breaking this down, why logistically within the rules of the cap, it's very difficult for the Lakers to trade for Giannis. Not impossible. You never say never. And in an NBA where Luka is a Laker, you never know what can happen. But doesn't seem likely that the Lakers can get in on a Giannis trade, but Jovan, if the opportunity is there, should the Lakers get in on a Giannis trade? Maybe that's an easy answer.
I think it's an easy answer. I would say yes, they should if they can, but I think to his point, I think it's pretty unlikely for, you know, you laid it out with the cap situation. It's just really difficult for LA to get there in terms of matching salary. It probably has to be a three-team trade. And then even then, I think the basis of your offer is Austin Reeves, who Milwaukee will then have to turn around and pay. But I think it's going to be a fair, you know, Austin, again, we've talked about, he's been producing like a $50+ million player. If you're getting him at $40 million, that's actually a bargain. But you're going to have to then turn around and pay him, and then you're getting one first round pick. And I think if the offer is Austin Reeves and a first, there are several teams, maybe a lot of teams that can offer something better. Like if I'm Milwaukee, I want a blue chip player in their early 20s, and I want multiple first round picks. So the Lakers cannot offer multiple first round picks until the summer. The issue then is the timing with the contract situation with then several of those guys about to enter free agency. So I think maybe the best offer the Lakers could do realistically, if this drags out a bit, is re-sign Austin and then next season flip Austin, and the money will work a little bit better. And then you have two tradable first round picks and multiple swaps, and maybe a due has popped or something, and you could, like, that could be an enticing throw in or whatever. But I think it this would have to play out in a way of Giannis demanding to go to the Lakers, or having a very short list of two or three teams. We know the Knicks are one of the teams he's interested in, but if it's like Knicks, Lakers, Heat, and I'm only going to one of those three situations, maybe the Lakers can put together an offer that is competitive enough or you know, beats out those other teams. If it's simply like Giannis is going to the best trade offer, or at least the best trade offer for like a competitive team, I think OKC, Houston, and San Antonio easily trump anything that the Lakers could offer, anything the Knicks could offer, anything Miami could offer. So like those three teams have young blue chip guys, they have picks, they are very set up to beat anything the Lakers offer. So I don't think it's realistic. Again, I think it would have to be like the Luka situation does, to Trevor's point, give you the optimism that anything could happen for the Lakers. And I believe they're going to go after him. Like I sure believe they're going to try. It's just the core of the offer is Austin and a first. And I just think there are ways. Like if you can get Stephon Castle and three firsts, I'd rather have Stephon Castle and three firsts.
Yeah, and that's the challenge for Lakers. It's the offer would likely be beat. I said it yesterday that for Lakers fans, if you really are hoping to see Giannis in a Lakers jersey, you should be hoping that he does not get traded by the trade deadline. You should be hoping that there he has availability this summer when the Lakers could have more draft capital to trade, depending, of course, on what they do here at the trade deadline, which is going to be coming up on February 5th. But you should be hoping that he is still a Milwaukee Buck this summer, and then they look to move him at that point because the Lakers will have much more flexibility to try to make something like that happen. Because let's also keep in mind, if you're trying to put, you know, Austin into these trades right now, Austin Reeves has been saying for years at this point that he wants to be a Laker. He wants to be a Laker for life and all these things. Milwaukee would not have that, those assurances. He would hit free agency. Milwaukee would put more value, and every team would put more value in Austin Reeves if he was already under contract on a long-term deal versus trading for him as a potential flight risk this summer. So I don't think that the Lakers landing Giannis is likely at the trade deadline here. If you're Rob Pelinka, you absolutely make that call. I'm not that worried about a Giannis and Luka fit together. And if you can get in on something like that, of course you want to try. But I think if Giannis is moved by the trade deadline, he's going somewhere else. And Jovan, the unfortunate thing about what you said, because you're absolutely right about the teams who have the best shot at it, if they're just stacking up value, they're all Western Conference teams. And that's going to be the tough part with that.
Yeah, I think Orlando is kind of interesting.
Orlando's interesting. That is, yeah. And Atlanta.
They could give Atlanta's up the other like one. A Paolo in that kind of deal. And then, you know, then you effectively have your Giannis replacement. Atlanta's a really interesting one, but Jalen Johnson's been so good that I wonder if he's literally played himself out of being tradable. But yeah, I agree with you guys. You make the phone call and you make the offer, and you certainly put yourself out there. I kind of agree with Cigar that like the Giannis-Luka match is a little bit clunky in the sense that I think they're guarded by similar players, which means that they'd likely dictate switches, which means they wouldn't have much two-man game potential. But I also just think Giannis is such a massive talent play that you do it 10 times out of 10. One thing I will say, I have no interest in Josh Hart or Gary Trent Jr. for this Laker team.
Okay, let's get to that. We just got a little bit of breaking news. Giannis Antetokounmpo expected to be sidelined 2 to 4 weeks with a right calf strain, which is on topic. But get that injury we saw last night, I know the initial concern was, could that be Achilles? 2 to 4 weeks, not good, but there's got to be some kind of a sigh of relief from Milwaukee right now, too, because I think it could have been a lot worse.
I mean, their season is just going off the rails now.
Yeah.
It's bad.
They've been really bad without him. Why no Josh Hart? I like Josh Hart.
I just think I think you want a clear fit as a starting three. And I like Josh Hart, but I don't think he shoots the basketball well enough to kind of be a natural slot there, especially since in the starting lineup right now with Rui and LeBron are the only two guys that are like dependable catch and shoot guys, really. I mean, obviously Austin's been shooting the ball well as of late, but I want someone that can shoot the basketball better at that three spot. And Gary Trent Jr. is just not very good on the margins at all. Even though he can shoot. So like, to me, like, I'm not saying you don't get those guys if you can get them for cheap, like, sure. If you can get them for cheap, sure, whatever. But like, I'm not including any asset, some legitimate asset for Josh Hart or Gary Trent.
It's funny is Gary Trent is one of those guys that had a reputation as being a really good defensive player back when he was with Portland. And that was a long time ago now. And yet that notion that he is this lockdown defender, it lingers still amongst various fan bases.
Yeah, I just don't think he's a legitimate rotation piece. I think he could play in the tail end of the rotation. I don't think he's a starter slot in kind of guy.
Yeah. Mamadou threw in that I think fans are mad because we lose. It's a blowout. It's never close. Yeah, the five games they've lost have all been by double digits.
Doesn't help.
Yeah. that doesn't help. That doesn't help. And it's also part of the reason why when we look at their net rating, it's not what a typical 15-5 team's net rating would look like when they do lose. When it goes bad for this team. Elijah threw in food for thought. What can we get if we trade Austin? We kind of just had that conversation, but we do appreciate the super chat there. This one said Herb Jones and Dylan Brooks and a backup center to compete versus OKC. That's a uh, That's a pretty pricey shopping list there. If it's both Dylan Brooks and Herb Jones, yeah. I don't know if Santa's going to be able to deliver that to the Lakers or not.
I take it, though.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think Dylan Brooks is for sale anymore. That's the thing when we talk about the offseason. Like, for me, the two guys that I was focusing on the most in the offseason were Wiggins and Brooks, as just looking at like situations where it's a very specific context of a guy who's got multiple years left who could help the Lakers as a starter, but is in a situation where maybe that team's like a play-in team or a lottery team. And because that team isn't really going anywhere, they're willing to flip that player for expiring contracts, expiring money, and some assets. But Miami and Phoenix have both started the season off really well. And if I'm Miami, I have to be absolutely blown away by an offer for Wiggins. And if I'm Phoenix, I have to be absolutely blown away for an offer for Brooks. So like, I don't know if you're getting them on a discount of Gabe Vincent and Maxi Kleba and a first, or not even that the Lakers would necessarily give up a first, but just like that, even that type of framework, I think isn't high enough for those teams. They would be taking a notable step back in terms of their competitive ambition. So I think those two guys for now, to me, are probably not available.
Yeah. Agreed. I don't think that would be. I think you got to look for guys that are, and you know, it's hard to find when we talk about finding the right value and finding guys that are, can you get it for a discount, right? When we're talking about Gabe Vincent, Maxi, the kind of the baseline package for the Lakers and maybe a first round pick, maybe not. Getting guys on a value that do the things the Lakers are looking for, specifically guys who are big athletic wings that can be switchy defensively, they can also provide shooting. Those are not typically the guys that you find on a discount. And so that's going to be the challenge for Rob Pelinka. If you said, hey, we need a serviceable big on this roster, okay, you could probably do some bargain hunting there. Hey, we're looking for a backup point guard that can play 10 minutes a night and handle the ball. Yeah, you could do some bargain hunting there, but 3-and-D athletic wing, or even athletic 3-and-D style guard that can do the things the Lakers need, those are not typically the guys that you're going to find on a Cyber Monday sale or anything like that. Let's go here. So you guys feel like the Lakers offense is too predictable. I feel like there's no ball movement. I feel like that's going to get us in the playoffs, Mamadou says. Yeah, I mean, I think there... It is to a degree, and it is something that needs to improve, specifically against the teams that can stop it. The challenge is that we've seen so many teams that can't stop it, that have not been able to stop the Lakers' pick-and-roll-based offense. You just need to have that other arrow in your quiver, that pitch in your arsenal. You need that punch-out pitch to turn to for the teams that can. I don't think it's so much that's definitely going to get them in the playoffs. It will depend on the matchups and what that's looking like.
I think that there's like a couple of different ways to approach offense in the NBA. There's like a brute force way to do it. And then there's like a system way to do it. And like, you're going to see a lot of system style stuff out of teams like Indiana, out of teams like Golden State, where it's like they are attempting to use action to break down the defense, like we were talking about earlier. But I mean, we all saw in the Lakers-Warriors series in 2023, there's a ceiling to that. And then all of a sudden, what's Golden State doing? They're spamming high pick and roll with Steph because they had to go brute force because their system wasn't generating open looks. And, you know, with the Lakers, they just have these unbelievable shot creators. And so what do I mean when I say brute force? It's relying on the individual greatness rather than the system to break the defense down. But I actually do think, first of all, for what they are, which is this brute force offense led by these three supremely gifted offensive players and all this play finishing, they actually do have quite a bit of complications. They will run little things that flow into their offense. And it's not like they're just walking the ball up the floor and running Luka pick and roll. They're usually doing something to kind of get into their flow. And so I'm more or less happy with the Lakers offensive organization. It's just what happens with brute force offense is when the stars don't play well, it looks ugly, right? So like, that's just the natural part of it. But like, you're also, trust me guys, like, There's a lot of Golden State fans right now that are watching the Warriors without Steph run 37 dribble handoffs every possession and they can't get an open look. So like, it is ultimately you'd prefer to have guys that can break the defense down like the Lakers do.
For sure. For sure. This one says, I like Nembhard and Nesmith for the Lakers. I can't imagine the price would be cheap on them, but sure, those would be great targets if the Lakers could get them. And the challenge with a team like Indiana, because when we're identifying sellers on the market, the challenge with a team like Indiana is they're looking at the roster, not just, hey, we're going to bottom out this year and hopefully we get a high draft pick and we're going to be building for the future. That's not necessarily the lens they're looking through. Yes, bottom out this year, because that's kind of the hand they've been dealt with the way they've been playing. Fortunately, they traded for their pick back. So they've got the silver lining of their draft pick this year. But they don't want Tyrese Halliburton to go Will Smith in the empty room next season. They want to have a team when Hallie comes back. And so they're not going to just sell off talent. They want to make sure that they can hit the ground running next season. So I think that complicates things a little bit in any kind of trade conversation with Indiana.
I do like both of those players, though, a lot.
Yeah. I'm not, to be honest, I don't think Rui in a first is enough for either one of these guys. That's where the Lakers are in a little bit of a tough spot from an asset perspective.
We've got a super chat from last show that said, has Jared Vanderbilt's defense really fallen off so hard that he deserves to be completely out of the rotation right now? So six straight games, Jared Vanderbilt has been a DNP coach's decision. Yova, what's your take? Why no Jared Vanderbilt? I talked at length about it on Lakers Nation the other day. Where are you at with Vando, and why has he been, people are treating him as though he's been exiled at this point?
He's been exiled. The joke I've been making on my show is he is in not only the doghouse, he is in like a two-story doghouse. He's probably in the basement. Like I don't know what's going on that front. I mean, JJ laid it out. So I'm looking at it quickly, and yeah. So he among the like rotation guys, if we want to put the two-way guys to the side, they have the second worst offensive rating with any specific player when Vando is on the floor. And I think that's been one of the biggest issues is the Lakers offense just really struggles when he's out there. A lot of that has come in the form of Vando, Jackson Hayes lineups. And when you have that combination out there, it's just, those are two guys who can't score outside of like 4 feet. And that in the modern NBA is just a really difficult problem to overcome. So I've noted that maybe he could fit in some, like, really, I think he's a small ball five at this point. I think the best stretches we've seen from Vando this season have been in those games where Ayton or Hayes was out and they played him as a small ball five. The issue is right now, DeAndre Ayton and Jackson Hayes are just better than him and they're better options, especially offensively. So, and you get to 48 minutes really quickly with Hayes and Ayton. So I just don't see where that opening in the rotation is with Vando. There's some fit stuff in terms of just the way that they're running the offense. Again, like him at the five would make sense as a screener, but you're not going to use Vando as a screener at the expense of Jackson or DA. Just like that's a lower percentage outcome. And then defensively, they're switching everything. So that negates some of his value as that point of attack, you know, attack dog on, you know, put him on a score, put him on an ant, put him on a Steph. Well, they're not really playing defense that way. So that negates some of that. So I think he can help. And I think when we get to the Maxi Kleba Dalton Connect part of the rotation, I think even with Vando's limitations, it's hard for you to sell me on those two. Like, I think Maxi has tailed off since that road trip where he really popped in that Milwaukee game. They've defended well with him on the floor, but you know, some of that, I think he's looked his age and looked like a guy who's dealt with injuries the last few years. And then Dalton, you know, he's been shooting the ball a little bit better, but I still think defensively is a clear minus. And then even offensively, if he's not getting involved, like, is just kind of out there. So I think at that point you may be looking to play in Vando a little bit more, but JJ has made it clear that, I mean, whenever he has a rotation decision, he leans on skill, shooting, offense, and even sometimes going a bit smaller. Those things all go against Vando right now. So I think for the time being, maybe tonight he uncorks him against Toronto. But even then, I'm expecting Gabe Vincent to probably be the fifth starter. Mm-hmm. And it's probably more Dalton and Maxi.
I agree with everything Jovan said. The one thing I would add here is, like, because he's not a contract that you're going to, you know, include in a trade unless there's a first round pick attached to it, where he becomes interesting is if the Lakers make a couple of 2-for-1 deals. So for instance, I know you've got another super chat coming up talking about some 2-for-1s. Like if a couple of 2-for-1s go down and suddenly you drop a couple rotation players, Vando could end up being a 9th or 10th man at that point. So like he, you know, I don't think we've seen the last of him this year, but ultimately as Jovan broke down, he just doesn't really fit into what the Lakers are trying to do on either end of the floor anymore.
That's exactly where I've been at as well with Jared Vanderbilt. Now, a lot of people look at it, but just based on merit, we hear a lot of, well, Vando is better than Maxey. And maybe that ultimately wins out and gets him some opportunities and some minutes. But I think Jovan hit the nail on the head when you're looking at it. It's not so much Vando versus Maxey. It's Vando versus Hayes and Ayton, because that's the role with four shooters on the floor at all times. That's what the Lakers are going for. You can't have Ayton and Vando. You can't have Hayes and Vando. You run into too many problems on the offensive end. And by going away from that, as much as I love Jared Vanderbilt, I love that he is absolute chaos on the defensive side of the ball. And you've got a team that needs athleticism and needs defense, especially on the perimeter, like Jared Vanderbilt can provide. It's frustrating to have that and not unleash him and not say, hey, we're going to use this. But what you're doing is you're maximizing Austin Reaves. You're maximizing Luka Doncic. You are instead putting your focus on those guys and giving them the spacing they need in order to be the best versions of themselves. And Vanderbilt is kind of a casualty of that. All right. We do have a few more that we do need to get into here. Question coming in said, might have to do this closer to the deadline, but how about something like KCP for Maxey and Gabe, which are expirings, Dalton Connect and Adu for Keon Ellis. Where are we at on Kentavious Caldwell-Pope? Because he's not had a great season. Like, are you at this point, and I was optimistic that he would bounce back this year for Memphis. Hasn't necessarily happened. Are you optimistic that he will, or are you not sacrificing the potential flexibility this summer in order to bring in our old friend?
Yeah, you know, for me with KCP, I looked at him a couple years ago as like a legit starting caliber player that could play the two. To me now, I'd look at him as one of those guys that's like a subsidiary piece that you could add to the rotation. So for instance, like if you could get him for Maxey and Gabe and you don't have to give up anything else and you don't need Maxey and Gabe for some larger deal, I could get behind something like that. I think guys like KCP too are one of those guys that I think are going to look best next to really good basketball players like Austin and Luka and LeBron, rather than what's going on in Memphis right now. Or it's a lot of Vince Williams and Cam Spencer and those guys trying to initiate offense. Right. So like, I think there's a certain amount of, I like KCP in a Laker jersey if it's convenient. And the same thing goes for me with Keon Ellis. I'm not as high on him as some other people are just because he's so small. And so for me, like those are both for both of those deals, if they don't hinder you from making a Herb Jones deal or an Andrew Wiggins deal, I could get behind them as like subsidiary deals.
All right, let's go here. Eric Pincus is reporting that he's hearing that this will be LeBron's last year with the Lakers. Any thoughts that he's hearing this will be? Oh, I said the same thing twice. Eric, I have not read the article that this is referring to. Eric isn't necessarily the newsbreaker type. He is amazing at what he does with the cap and everything else. But I'm not saying he's not saying this. Just I would question what the aggregation looks like on something like this before we like jump to the conclusion that, you know, oh, breaking news, LeBron is, you know, retiring. But hypothetically, if this is LeBron's last year with the Lakers, one way or another, he could leave in free agency. He could retire. We'll say the Lakers could decide not to offer him a contract. Jovan, what would your thoughts be on the Lakers moving forward if we're looking at this being LeBron's final year, one way or another?
It could just be his final year in the NBA. Sure. We don't have clarity on that yet, right? So and I don't even know if he has clarity on that, whether he wants to continue playing or not. Whenever he's discussed that or some of the reporting around that has indicated that he hasn't made that decision yet. To go back to the offseason, I think the whole contract situation didn't play out the way that he wanted. Not to rehash that too much, but he never got an official offer beyond just the player option that he had to decide on. So in some ways, I mean, the Lakers have clearly been shifting things toward Luka. And I think even with LeBron returning, I was curious to just see like how much they tried to incorporate him into the offense. And it has felt very much like, no, this is Luka's team and to a lesser extent, Austin's team, and you need to fit in around that. And I'm sure there's like a rhythm and flow element to that if you don't want to disrupt that with a player returning. But I think that the hierarchy is clearly shifted. And now, does that mean LeBron can't fit with the Lakers moving forward? I think that's a premature conclusion. As Jason noted, and I noted on my show a couple of days ago, like LeBron has struggled to start the last couple seasons, and going back to last year, he had a really rough first month. And then around that, or honestly, around this point last season, but granted, he started the season like early to mid-December, he started to look more like himself. And then that ramped up into that incredible January and February that he had. So I think we need to give it a little bit more time before we determine whether he fits with Luka or Austin moving forward or like next year. I think the more interesting conversation for me is like, if he does stay, or if he does play another season, regardless of whether it's with LA or somewhere else, what does that look like in terms of the salary? Because I don't know that he's going to be able to command $50+ million again, or maybe even $40+ million again. And it's not even necessarily a value thing of his value. It's just like with the new CBA and the first apron, second apron, like it is really tricky, and every dollar really matters to an extent that it didn't necessarily matter before. So you got to figure out like what is a fair value for a soon to be 42-year-old LeBron. Is that 25 million? Is that 30 million? 35? Like somewhere in that range. I don't know, but I think that's its own thing, because I think we've been assuming if he does stay in LA, it's probably going to be at a pretty high number. But I think if you're the Lakers, you have to try to find a way to negotiate that down, because if it's just running it back next year with a 42-year-old LeBron, I think you want to add another piece or two to this group if you are keeping LeBron, in my opinion.
100%. Yep. Hit the nail on the head. When we look at what they're going to do this summer and what the salaries could look like, they could wind up being one of the bigger cap space teams of the offseason, but you don't want to sacrifice all of that flexibility when you have an opportunity to potentially substantially improve the team, whether that be via the trade market or free agent market.
I think if LeBron is healthy and feeling good physically and he feels like he can help a team win a championship next year, and that team happens to be the Lakers, I think he'll be a Laker next year. I think he's old enough now that he won't leave. But I think that like if push comes to shove and it's August and he's like, man, like this team has a shot this year, and you know, I'm here in LA, you know, I think he'll come back. I just think if he's breaking down and he looks like a shell of himself, I think he could hang it up though.
Let's go RJ Barrett and Herb Jones for Rui Dalton, a first and expiring. I mean, I think if you're the Lakers, you're hoping to get, I don't know if you even get into just Herb Jones for that. I don't think you get both those guys, but the math I'm sure doesn't even work on that. But you're looking to try to get into the conversation for one of those, and I think ideally it would be Herb Jones.
Yeah, you get Herb Jones, you put out what you need to put out. Yeah. I think he's the kind of guy that rounds out a lot of Laker lineups.
This one said, should trade talks halt till the Giannis situation ends? No. Yeah, I don't think it's like AD, right, I want to be a Laker. Right? If that becomes what's coming out of Giannis's camp, okay, you know, maybe that changes. Like, hey, I only want to be a Laker. That's going to change your process here. But if it's, you know, there's 15 teams that Giannis will consider playing for, and the Lakers just one of them, and most of those have better offers than what the Lakers can offer, you don't hold off doing other deals just to chase down the, you know, unlikely shot at getting Giannis Antetokounmpo. If you have a chance to get, let's say it is Herb Jones, the Lakers should not say, well, no, we're not going to go make this trade because we're waiting just in case we can get in on a Giannis Antetokounmpo trade, because I just don't think, especially if it's midseason, I don't think it's particularly likely.
You don't want to be Golden State and like pass on OG Anunoby and Pascal Siakam for $60 million on Jimmy Butler because you were holding out for LeBron or Giannis. Like you want to make sure that you're practical about what you think you can get.
This very hard-hitting, important question here. Can Trev Jovan rock the Jason look?
I'm getting ready to cut my hair. This it's so annoying, man.
Well, I can't grow facial hair, so no, I can't.
I'm gonna go get a haircut today, so I'm definitely not rocking the Jason look. But I've seen people compare it to Van Damme and Time Cop.
Oh God.
And I think that's a pretty favorable compare. I think that's a good one. But yeah, so you're gonna what are you gonna do? You're gonna cut it all off?
I'm getting close. Like I keep just telling. I've never done this before, so I was like, I'm just gonna lean into it, and then when I'm sick of it, I'll cut it. But it's like it's starting to get to the point where it's annoying. Like especially like last night, I had a men's league game that ended pretty late, so obviously I had to take a shower, and now my hair's wet when I'm trying to go to bed. It's just a huge pain in the ass. Like I had short hair my entire life, and I definitely miss some of the practical elements of it. I'm not saying I'm going to cut it right away, but every day I get a little closer to making that decision.
All right, we'll finish with this one. Herb would be great at the three, but would a Trey Murphy trade look, what would that look like overall better? He's taking a leap defensively, could fit better post LeBron. I think I think Trey Murphy is going to cost even more than Herb Jones, and the Lakers may struggle to get into a Herb Jones deal.
Yeah, like I think you'd have to include Austin, right, for a deal like that?
Yeah.
Like, no.
And I don't think the Lakers do that.
Yeah. Agreed. All right. Appreciate everybody for joining us today on the show. We are 2 days a week. We'll be back next week with more Lakers Collective. Hopefully the Lakers have picked up a few wins on the road when we do so. But if you haven't yet, please make sure you subscribe to the channel. Follow us over on Apple Podcasts. We need more ratings and reviews over on Apple Podcasts, by the way. So if you guys wouldn't mind, toss us a 5-star rating and review over on Apple Podcasts. Guys, this is a lot of fun as always. Appreciate it. And let's see if the Lakers can get a win tonight in Toronto. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you. And stay safe.